Welcome to the Fulham on the Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9 o'clock Irish Summer Time. Today is May 2nd. And of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. But first, let's have a review of what's happened this week. This has been a week in which the Fed cut interest rates by 25 basis points, which wasn't a surprise for the market. This was also a week in which Brazil's debt rating was raised to investment grade, and we've seen that market break up emphatically yesterday and improve upon that performance today. This has also been a week in which the dollar firmed up quite considerably against the euro, and we've seen it back away from 160, and today it's around 154 against the euro. This has also been a week in which we saw gold breaking down from the short-term range and testing the 850 level. It hasn't broken below that just yet, and this is potentially coming back towards interesting territory, although I'm not tempted in here right now. This has also been a week in which we saw oil pulling back from towards $120, and it is currently sitting at 116, having been as low as 111 earlier on today. This has also been a week in which commodities generally were hit pretty hard yesterday. We saw downward dynamics right across the range of soft commodities, and we also saw this week where rice, which had been in an accelerating uptrend, peaked out and really started to pull back quite aggressively. It was limit down, I think, on 3 days in a row, and this really does mark the onset of a new medium-term correction. But this move out of commodities and into stock markets is quite important. Commodities were the only game in town, primarily because confidence in stock markets had been shaken quite badly by the credit crisis that we saw starting last summer and getting progressively worse into the end of last year. Commodities were a safe haven, as were government bonds, but commodities were also a hedge against inflation, which was being stoked by the credit creation that we were seeing in the government debt markets, or liquidity. The important point now is that commodities have entered a medium-term correction, and they have been pulling back for about the last month. That is not yet being reflected on the news headlines, where we continue to see hyperbole regarding world food crises and the proposed government responses. The fact of the matter is, and this is backed up by technical evidence or technical facts looking at the charts, is that the vast majority of commodities have now entered medium-term corrections. And stock markets found support primarily in January, but also in mid-March, and are rallying quite considerably. Over the last week, we've seen a number of markets breaking up, either to new highs in the case of Brazil, or breaking above their February highs in probably the first psychological perception stage of a new uptrend. The evidence is that January 22nd was a nadir of sentiment, and it was a selling climax. A number of markets rallied considerably from there, but the vast majority have dribbled along for the last 3 months. A number made new lows in March, but the vast majority were able to hold above their January lows and are now pushing above their February highs. So we are starting to see higher highs and higher lows. Higher lows, of course, being the foundation for any uptrend. And this is quite important. We're in the first psychological perception stage because the first psychological perception stage is disbelief. There are lots of investors out there who are heavily weighted in cash because there was the majority of investors sold at least part of their position to pull markets back this far in the first place. And given the fact that markets are not accelerating out of these formations, really tells us that it has been a slow progression for equity investors to buy back in, because they just don't believe that the worst of the credit crisis is over. But the selling climax back in January was probably the best signal out there that we had seen a bearish climax. So that leaves us in a point where the commodity markets, which had seen so many new investors and such an amount of money pouring into that market, and that is now has come to an end, at least for the short to medium term, and stock markets are starting to attract interest once more. In terms of stock markets, well, they're probably the only asset class out there now that are oversold. Government bonds are really quite expensive, particularly since they were seen as a haven for anyone trying to escape the liquidity crisis. Commodities are pulling back and haven't really found support as an asset class just yet. The exception there, I should mention, is oil. Oil remains very much in a consistent uptrend, and this is by no means a larger reaction within the overall trend than we've seen previously, and it still remains consistent. Provided it can hold above that $105 to $100 range, this will still be a relatively consistent uptrend. So that is an exception in the whole commodity asset class. In fact, it was only a couple of years ago when people were still arguing as to whether commodities were an asset class. So that's an example of how far we've come. But given the amount of money that can move commodity markets in here at the moment, it's comparatively very small compared with the amount of money that is invested in stock markets or indeed in the bond markets. So we are still very much in the early stages of this commodity super cycle. The chances are that given the infrastructure development that we can expect to continue right across the Asian region and right across the world, the demand for commodities is likely to grow not just in terms of years but in terms of decades, and it could be another 10 or 20 years before we see a significant peak in commodity demand or before supply can really catch up with the pace of demand. But the most important thing that's happening here at the moment is that stock markets are finding support, or will have found support, and are rallying away from that support, and this is very important. We are still very much in a base building formation or base building pattern for financially weighted indices, and that is this the same for Switzerland as it is for Ireland, as it is for the financial indices in the USA. And depending on the proximity to the subprime or to the housing markets that a particular market has, or a particular country index has, then that is a good indication of how much base building has to go on. For example, those resources markets are quite close to their highs, and a couple have broken upwards. Other markets which have been relatively untouched by the subprime or by falling house prices are doing comparatively better. Those that are particularly heavily weighted by financials are lagging. For financials, their business model has been severely challenged. They're not going to be able to make money out of putting together various different types of debt that nobody else wants and packaging them, repackaging them, and leveraging them, and then selling them on to unwitting investors anymore. They will have to come up with a new game to justify the type of fees that they want to charge. That is probably going to take some time, and there is going to be a lengthy convalescence for indices that are heavily weighted by financials. However, there are a number of other markets which are performing really quite well, and that is in spite of the fact that they are also heavily weighted by financials. When we look at markets, for example, Singapore's financials are actually leading the overall index. The same can be said of Taiwan. Japan, where the market is really in a bit of a malaise, is also being led by its financials. So as we see investors moving back towards stock markets, they're moving back more aggressively into developed Asia, into resources markets, and they are steering well clear of any market which would have been heavily exposed to the subprime fiasco. That is as true of India and China as it is of Singapore or Taiwan. And this is also quite important. China this week found support and rallied significantly, I think, well, perhaps that was last week, due to the intervention by the government in cutting stamp duty. And although it's been closed for the last 2 days, we've had a very good rally in that market, and potentially this is the bottom. It would have to sustain a move below 3,000 on the A shares, or Shanghai A shares, to reaffirm this downtrend, but I am quite doubtful that that is going to happen. I'm betting that chances are we're going to see the Chinese market finding support and holding above it. That means that Hong Kong, which had the H shares in Hong Kong, which had also fallen 50%, have improved quite considerably, and they are one of the better performing markets out there right now in terms of developed markets. I think it's fair to say that Hong Kong is a developed market. Enough with stock markets. Over the longer term, resources markets are going to do considerably better over the longer term than the majority of other markets. The other markets that are going to compete are going to be those that are leading the world in terms of GDP growth. And for the most part, those markets are in Asia. The resources markets are feeding off of the phenomenal GDP growth, the access of an additional 3 billion consumers to the world markets, and the development that that entails. When we talk about an additional 3 billion people, the reality is that the majority of those people are really quite young, and infrastructure has to be built today to provide jobs for them in the future, to give them an education, and to make sure that they will be able to have their own homes. The reality also is that as people move out of subsistence living, and we are seeing the impacts of that today in terms of the demand for foods and all soft commodities, but also in the demand for industrial metals as infrastructure is built, and of course in per capita use of energy. But as they move away from subsistence living, the first thing they'll do is improve their diets. But very quickly after that, as soon as you have a full belly, you start to think about things that will make your life easier. And all of those people aspire to the standard of living that we take for granted in the West. And over the next 20 to 30 years, there is every chance that the standard of living and the per capita consumption of all commodities is going to increase considerably right across the Asian region, and of course, right across the rest of the world as well. Asia is leading the world right now in terms of GDP growth. That's probably not going to change. China and India are probably the king and queen of emerging markets, but Brazil is right up there as well, and there are a number of other Asian markets vying for inclusion in that elite group. But because you have so many new people moving into the consumer world, and where we have massive increases in productivity, that is driving demand for just about all commodities. And because commodities have been in a bear market for over 25 years, and where we saw the people who survived in that industry were the survivors, quite literally. They were the ones who were able to cut costs to the bone, who survived by making sure that they were able to get minerals out of the ground at the cheapest possible price and didn't overstretch themselves. These were not adventurous people. They were cautious in the way they ran their businesses. But that type of caution will help you survive in a bear market. It doesn't help you to increase production in a bull market. And it has taken the resources industry quite a long time, 8 to 9 years so far, to realize that demand for so many resources is only going to increase, that this isn't a cyclical move, that it is a secular move. And it is only now that they're starting to believe what planners have been believing in the emerging markets or progressing markets for upwards of the last 20 years. They're planning cities, and they're planning to upgrade their domestic infrastructure to world class, and they're going to need resources. And the fact is that right now there just aren't very many mega class miners out there, and there aren't very many resources companies in terms of companies that can actually deliver the type and quantity of resources that these major economies are looking for. That means that companies such as Rio Tinto, BHP, survivors throughout the bear market, are ideally placed today to benefit from the demand that is coming from the progressing economies. It also means that there is a race going on at the moment to become the biggest, because the trend of consolidation in the industry is only set to continue. We're also in a period where nationalization is very much in fashion. A number of countries have already nationalized their resources industries, and that is a trend which is likely to continue. It means that companies with access to resources in secure and politically secure parts of the world have a natural advantage for investors. And that is also something that's not going to change anytime soon. Agricultural commodities were very much the fashion for the last quarter. And we've seen a large number of agricultural commodities breaking upwards from long-term basis, sustaining those moves over the last 3 or 4 years. We've seen the grains, who had been consolidating for much of the last 2 years, breaking upwards to new high ground and setting world headlines. This is a secular move. And it is also something that is probably not going to change for the very long term. What it does mean, though, because these are weather-related resources, is that they are going to be extremely volatile and they are going to be best bought following corrections. And that is as true of the commodities as it is of the shares that are involved in fertilizers or in potash, that sort of thing. They are all trading at historic highs right now, and it is only a matter of time before they start to pull back. But they're certainly not going to pull back into any long-term base, and when they start to find support, that is going to be the ideal buying opportunity. We're going to be presented with a number of these opportunities over the coming decades. And while momentum trading and buying new highs in a number of these shares is likely to be profitable, more often than not, the better and lower risk opportunity is to wait for the corrections and to buy following the correction once we've seen these markets finding support. Of course, the massive demand for all types of commodities is inflationary over the long term. And the inflation is not just coming from the demand for commodities. It is also coming from the stimulus packages that have been released over the last number of years, indeed over the last number of decades, by so many central banks. It's almost like a race to the bottom in terms of devaluation. Central banks are far more afraid of deflation than inflation, given the experience that Japan experienced, or that Japan went through and is only really now just emerging from. It means that in the face of any type of deflationary activity in the markets, central banks are going to err on the side of inflation because there is a perception that they can deal with inflation much better than with deflation. And the stimulus packages that we've seen over the last year are massively inflationary, but probably not right away. Over the longer term, the amount of liquidity that is being injected right now from the correction last May of last March, or May 2 years ago, Y2K with the Nasdaq bust, and 9/11. Prior to that, we had the Russian debt default, the Asian financial crisis, and we can go back almost 20 years where we've had massive injections of liquidity anytime there's been a deflationary threat. Sooner or later, that is going to result in more inflation, and the policy response will be to have higher interest rates. The injection of liquidity and cutting of interest rates that we've had over the last 6 months or so has put the spanner in the works in terms of that long-term inflationary, or the longer-term view of seeing higher interest rates and higher yields. The injection of liquidity we've seen has paused, or has really lengthened, the credit cycle that we've had over the last 20 years. And you can see that from the charts of government bond yields. Government bond yields bottomed in 2003, and they're testing those lows right now. or they tested them over the last couple of months, and we're in a classic base building formation. I think it's unlikely that we're going to see interest rates falling back to the lows that they were perhaps 4 or 5 years ago, but we may get quite close to them. And when we see interest rates starting to rise once more, there is a good likelihood that they're going to rise higher than they were 6 months ago. And over time, we will start to notice that we will see a progression of higher lows and higher highs of that government bond yield chart. The 10-year US government bond yield is probably the better one to look at because there's just so much data on it. Looking at the long-term chart of Australian prices, or indeed yields, they look like a bottom forming quite considerably. Of course, Australia, being ideally placed as a commodity exporter, is likely to have more inflationary pressure on that economy going forward. And the long-term price chart of government bond yield, or government bond prices, excuse me, looks like an accident waiting to happen. Inflation does seem to be only a matter of time before it starts to have a bearing there. But no signal just yet that that is about to happen right now. Of course, the massive injections of liquidity are debasing all fiat currencies, and that is driving people towards physical commodities and gold especially. Gold got right up to $1,000 and is currently at $857. So it's at the beginning of a new medium-term correction, following a very impressive move in the last half of 2008 and the beginning of 2007, the first half of our first part of 2008. It's in a medium-term correction, and it hasn't found support just yet. However, it is coming into an interesting area. And the first upward dynamic is going to be an indication that it is finding support. Over the long term, gold is very likely to move back above $1,000 and improve upon that performance quite considerably. Over the last 5 or 6 years, we've seen on a number of occasions where gold has accelerated, has performed really quite well, has improved by 20-30%, and then has pulled back, moved into a consolidation for a year, perhaps more than that, and then pushed upwards to new high ground, improved upon it, improved by 20-30%, maybe 40%, and then pulled back and moved into another consolidation. And this just looks like a continuation of that pattern. The same can be said for platinum, which led the move both on the upside and the downside, as well as silver and palladium. We see the same type of thing happening in the industrial commodities, or the industrial metals. While gold, silver, platinum, and palladium tend to all go at the same time with a week or two in between, that is certainly not the case with industrial metals. We tend to see them go by turn. At the moment, tin has been the leader, although pulling back this week, whereas we have seen aluminium and copper coming up towards their highs, pulling back somewhat over this week, but still reasonably close to their all-time highs and still within a consolidation. And a number are still in base building formations, such as nickel and zinc and lead to a certain extent. So they are going by turn, and they tend, this has been a trend that we've seen over the last 5 or 6 years, and that is probably not something that's going to change very much either. Over the long term, because you have these massive injections of liquidity and a very easy monetary policy, we are seeing the dollar pulling back considerably over the last year or so, although it has found support over the last month and has rallied quite well this week. But over the long term, the value of fiat currencies is very much in a race to the bottom. When we see M3 growing at multiples of GDP growth, that is very much an indication that there is far too much money entering the system. The problem with the credit crisis, of course, is that there's lots of liquidity, but it's just not getting to the right people because banks are hoarding it because they're afraid of, well, they're afraid for their own survival. But what it also means is that In the competitive world of globalization, there is no country wants a strong currency, and they're competing with each other to make sure that they don't, none of them have a strong currency for very long. The dollar was oversold because it had been in an accelerating downtrend for a few mu for a couple of months and has found support. Over the long term, we're probably not going to see huge secular trends in the major currency crosses because, as I said, there is no country wants a strong currency. However, some countries want a weak currency more than others. That's certainly the case for the US dollar at the moment. But looking at the stronger currencies in the world, they're primarily in Asia and a number of those resources countries. Following the Asian financial crisis, a number of the Asian currencies became progressively weaker and are only now starting to strengthen. The move by the Chinese yuan is certainly helping the rest of the countries in the Asian region allowing them to move their currencies into a stronger footing. And the way has also been led by India, where they have allowed their currency to strengthen in an effort to combat domestic inflation. And this is a trend that probably is a secular move, where we're seeing Asian currencies starting to strengthen quite considerably. And we are seeing a number of them breaking upwards from bases. There are also exceptions, such as Singapore, where they have allowed their currency to strengthen to an extent where it is actually more strong now than it was before the Asian financial crisis. But that is a symptom of the fact that they see themselves very much as the Singapore, or sorry, as the Switzerland of Asia. And a strong currency is in their favor because they are trying to attract investment inflows and in terms of private banking. But because we have Asia leading the world in terms of GDP growth, because you have these huge young populations striving to the type of living standards that we take for granted in the West, and because currencies are strengthening in the region, and because stock markets generally tend to track the performance of GDP growth over the long term, well, then it's a region which is very low risk in terms of long-term investment. It will certainly be volatile, and just like anything else, it's probably best bought following corrections. In terms of the better opportunities out there right now, we're seeing that equity markets are probably the best out there at the moment, and we're seeing a number of Asian markets leading on the upside. And with that thought, I will leave you for the evening, but have a great weekend, and thank you for your time.